This is the Oanda Podcast.
You're listening to the Oanda Market Insights Podcast, where we preview and review all the big business and market stories with Oanda senior market analysts from around the world. And today it is Jeff Halley in Singapore. Good morning from London, Jeff.
Good afternoon from Singapore.
Now, before we go into the extraordinary events in Turkey over the weekend, the latest from the markets where you are in Asia, please.
Yeah, currency markets have been very quiet, as have precious metals and energy markets. So oil is fairly much unchanged from Friday, as is gold. The action's really been in the current in the equity markets today. Most of Asia is in the positive after Nasdaq futures rallied early this morning in Asia. It's very much a repetition of the price action that we saw in New York on Friday afternoon. The only exception to that really has been the Nikkei 225, which is down over 2% today, and that's due to the Bank of Japan widening its range that it will allow JGBs to trade in on its rate decision statement on Friday. But also it said it would no longer buy Nikkei 225 ETFs. So it will only buy TOPIX, which is a much broader index linked ETFs. That saw the Nikkei retreat on Friday, and that's continued again today. The Nikkei actually does look in danger of a fairly material downside correction at this stage. So that really wraps up Asia. I expect European markets to open modestly higher as we await US data, which is very much bookended towards the end of the week.
Okay, looking west from where you are and east from where I am, let's contemplate Turkey. Turkey's currency tumbled as much as 14% after President Erdogan sacked the country's central bank governor. He replaced him on Saturday. That is the third central bank governor to leave in under 2 years. And it's very much built around the idea of raising interest rates to fight inflation, which is an extraordinary policy, really, not one that is very common. It shocked both local and foreign investors who had actually praised Turkey's recent monetary policy.
Yeah, I mean, the now ex-central bank governor had raised interest rates by a total of around 8% over the last 3 months and had really started making inroads into that inflation fight. But also, more importantly, he'd very much stabilised the Turkish lira. As we saw this morning after that news hit the wires over the weekend, the Turkish lira fell by 17% at one stage this morning. It's still down around 10% at the moment. The president has this idea that if you raise interest rates, that creates inflation, which flies in the face of every economic theory that's ever been written. So the demise of the previous governors has been fairly much related to them raising interest rates in a classical sort of way to rein in inflation, which is running about 15% there. So he raised the interest rates by 2% last week and got fired on Saturday. To be replaced by a Erdogan associated party member who is a university business school professor who also believes, unsurprisingly, that raising interest rates causes inflation. What he has done is calm markets by coming out this morning and saying he had no plans to change policy settings at this stage, which is probably quite lucky, because if he cuts rates, the markets will punish them. And if he raises rates, he'll probably get fired. So doing nothing may be the best plan right at this stage. But none of it is good news at all for Turkey or for Turkish markets.
Turkey sits right in the middle between Europe and Asia, of course. How important is Turkey for the likes of Europe, the UK, the USA, and where you are?
Well, Turkey is a NATO member, despite the fraught relations between Turkey and US these days. So it has the largest standing army in NATO after the United States. It's a very important member of that grouping, and from a geopolitical perspective, is a bulwark against Russian influence, shall we say. From an economic point of view, it's important that Turkey is a stable country. It is on the border of the European Union, and it would probably give the European and the UK nightmares if Turkey was to enter an economic crisis because of these policies, the implications there for more refugees, not Turkish refugees, but we know that the president isn't afraid of playing that refugee card when he wants more aid, et cetera, et cetera. So from an economic and geopolitical point of view, a stable Turkey, an economically sound Turkey is extremely important to the European Union and to the United Kingdom.
Okay, talking of the European Union, I get the feeling that much of the focus this week will be on the vaccine war between the UK and the EU. Boris Johnson apparently is going to be speaking to EU national leaders this week, in fact, possibly even today, and trying to get that some sort of agreement about the AstraZeneca vaccine export to the UK and where we go from here. Of course, London has laid claim to millions of doses of the jab, which is produced at a Dutch factory, and it sparked a fierce battle with the European Commission, which says that that should be used in the EU. I mean, this is a very, very serious problem for everyone on a number of levels, economic and, of course, health. It's absolutely shocking, isn't it, that it has come to this?
Yeah, look, I think there's a lot of people who didn't vote for Brexit who might be reconsidering their thoughts about this right now. The EU has not covered itself in glory at all. Its vaccine program has been stuttering, to say the least, although it is accelerating now. It's refused, I think, a couple of weeks ago to send a shipment of vaccines, AstraZeneca ones, to Australia. And now it's looking at blocking UK exports. That has implications for the UK because a lot of the recent premium and positive outlook in the UK for UK asset markets has been because they're doing so well on the vaccination front, using obviously quite a lot of this AstraZeneca vaccine. Anything that would postpone that is perhaps, I feel, going to weigh on the sterling and on UK equities this week because it could lengthen out the time scale of the recovery. The other side of this is that the Nordic countries have ignored the European Medical Agency, which has said that the AstraZeneca vaccine is safe, and they've still suspended it. And I do believe there might be a couple of other countries in the EU that are still not using it as well. So, well, it may well be the case now because of these actions that people in the EU either can't get vaccinated or they will refuse to have the AstraZeneca one, which means that the EU may end up with hundreds of millions of doses of excess AstraZeneca vaccine. Then we get into the other stories. Are they, they're not prepared to send that to poor countries who need it or to the UK? And what if that all expires and it has to be thrown away? I mean, the connotations of this for the EU is very, very dangerous. They're not making many friends around the world at the moment, I don't think, with their attitude. So I think they're running on quite dangerous ground. I believe that this will weigh on both the euro and European asset markets this week.
Do you think this might play into the UK's hands to a certain extent? We're trying to get some deals with big countries outside the EU, of course, the USA and parts of the Pacific. And with the EU behaving as it is, does that play into Britain's hands?
I don't think that the countries that the EU have trading agreements with are necessarily going to be materially affected by this vaccine fallout. I think this could potentially affect the UK, and it will affect developing nations who probably hope that some of these excess vaccines would find their way into their hands to help their populations. So they won't win any friends in that respect. I mean, the UK's policy is somewhat confused. They're picking a fight with China on many levels at the moment, yet they want to be open to China investment and such like. So that door's a little bit shut, I believe. I think if the EU stops shipments to important Asian countries in particular, which is where the UK is really looking, and that affects relations, and then that could play into the UK hands for sure.
Okay, before we look ahead to the next few days, Jeff, just wanted to ask you about oil, because, of course, the oil price has been going down over the last few days. What is the latest today?
Yeah, oil markets have moved sideways today. They were up about 40 cents a barrel on Friday. It's consolidating. It had actually made back some of its gains from that capitulation trade that we saw around the midweek. We saw oil fall like about 7%. And I think part of that was the excessive amount of speculative longs in the market all running for the door at once and finding it was a very small exit door. But also, it comes back to the EU again. Their vaccination program isn't running as it should. They're entering into a series of new national lockdowns or extending lockdowns. That is affecting the consumption outlook globally for oil, because obviously the EU is a huge consumer of crude oil. And that seems to have been the straw that broke the camel's back. In the bigger picture, I do believe that oil will return to these recent highs. So we should see Brent back to $70 a barrel. We may need to see the OPEC, the monthly OPEC Plus meeting passed though in the first week of April, and if they choose not to cut to reduce their production cuts again this time, that should see oil back to those levels. I'm 50-50 here. I suspect that the OPEC Plus won't be inclined to reduce those production cuts if Brent crude sitting around $60 to $62 a barrel. But nevertheless, I think although we're going through some short-term pain at the moment, I do believe that oil structural outlook is positive, and as the world recovery accelerates this year, we are going to see oil prices return to those recent highs.
Okay, we are in the last week of this quarter, approaching the holidays, Easter holidays for many. What are the outstanding highlights that we should look out for this week?
Yes, I don't know where that quarter's gone. It's gone very, very quickly, actually. The main data is backloaded towards, it's sort of weighted towards the end of the week. So we haven't really got much up until Wednesday, and that means pretty much that markets will move around on headlines and almost certainly on the trajectory of the US bond market, whether bond yields go up or down in the US, that will drive the price actions across asset classes around the rest of the world. Going into into Thursday, we have manufacturing and service PMIs from Europe, which will be quite closely watched. I suspect it's going to show that the manufacturing side of Europe is doing very, very well, but that services remain muted, and that will more than likely confirm that the European Union's recovery is going to take longer than the UK or the US's. We have price consumption expenditure data out of the US on Friday. That's a very closely watched measure by the Federal Reserve Bank. If that was to show a surprise upside print, that would probably have the inflationistas on their soapboxes again. And we'd see another spike in US yields. They'd be saying that the Fed needs to move more quickly. More than likely, though, we're going to see the weather effects from that Texas deep freeze affecting that data. And I'm expecting it to come in just a little bit lower than expected. I think it was around 0.7%. So I'm not expecting any surprises, but the danger is that it surprises to the upside. And then we see yields move higher. Almost certainly that will mean a weak equity market into the week.
Okay, Jeff, have a very good week. We'll speak to you again on Wednesday.
Thank you very much. Take care.
This is the Oanda Podcast.